We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Food for thought. Happy New Year. Thanks for sticking with us for another season right here on Not Your Mama's Podcast, is what my buddy Chief Justice 06 likes to call what we got going on here. What's going on, Will Priester? I see some fireworks in the background. Happy New Year, my friend.
Yeah, man. Got the fireworks going. Happy New Year to everybody. It's food for thought. It's 2024. We made it. And guess what, folks? The more things change, the more things stay the same. The No Faith League was in full effect yet again over the weekend, folks. We're going to go over our recap. I'm not going to go over every game. I'm just going to go over our No Faith games of the week. Obviously, I don't think this one is as obvious, but because of the score, Luch, I think I need to highlight it. Falcons run into Soldier Field and get throttled by the Chicago Bears, 37-17. Oh, man, Arthur Smith might be out of a job real soon. No Faith League in full effect. The Dolphins run into Baltimore, 56-19, and they are who we thought they were, Luch. They're going to beat the teams they should beat, but when they have to play upper echelon competition, they can't get it done. All I wanted to see, Luch, was a close enough game. If this game ended 28-24, the defense held its own, you would not hear me saying this today. But we thought the defense had made some strides, and they did have some injuries in that game. Pour one out for Bradley Chubb. Super sorry about that. Luch, 56-19 isn't going to get it done. This team is in the playoffs. They might get bounced the first round. No Faith League. Baltimore, 56-19, looking like the best team in the NFL. This is a No Faith League honorable mention, Luch. Saints come up and beat the Buccaneers 23-13 on the road. Buccaneers get this done. They were pretty much controlling their own destiny, winning the NFC South, going to the playoffs. Now we've got a fight to the finish in Week 18, Saints 23-13. None bigger than this one, Luch. No Faith League game of the week. Cardinals go into Philly, come out victorious 35-31. Eagles faltering yet again. Going to be in control of the NFC South. NFC East. But boy, do they not look good going into the playoffs, Luch. They might get bounced the first round as well. No Faith League, Luch. I'm gonna say this one. 49ers, yes, they did have to go on the road. I think we all expected them to put a beat down on Washington. 27-10, respectable. Christian McCaffrey went down in that game. We understand that. But, Luch, I think we expected the 49ers to put a little bit more of a spanking on the Commanders. Nevertheless, they come out with the W. Last but not least, because I think everything else that we saw this week, we expected. Steelers come out victorious against the Seahawks, solidifying another successful, and when I say successful, another non-losing season for Mike Tomlin. 30-23. That's our No Faith League recap for week 17.
Just to touch on the Eagles, Cowboys, NFC East. If the Cowboys win on this coming Sunday, they win the division. So You know, we'll see what happens. The Cowboys kind of control their own destiny there with a tiebreaker. We'll get to the Eagles, but let's backtrack and start with the Baltimore Ravens, who are one of our two tier one teams. I mean, I'm not ready to knock San Fran out of tier one. I think those are the two tier one teams, and I think there's a large gap, as we've talked on the show, where there's probably eight teams in tier two. And just, you know, first of all, masterclass game from Lamar Jackson. He is the unofficial MVP. No question about it. I'm glad we had a really nice discussion about Lamar and the different version of the Tom Brady type heroics that he brings to the organization in terms of covering up other holes. You know, a good friend, the commish was on the pod last week. What a game. But just about Miami, they are firmly a tier two team. If, you know, and I can say the same thing for a lot of these quote unquote food for thought tier two teams that we've had so much fun with, whether it's Miami, nothing has changed in my eyes about Detroit and maybe Dallas, to be honest with you, but probably more so Detroit. Like, it's a good, fun thought to have those teams in the Super Bowl. They have talent. If all of the cards and if all of the matchups broke out in their favor, where it was their strength against an opponent weakness, they could get to a Super Bowl. Like, I feel like all these, you know, second tier teams are super volatile, but they're clearly, they clearly don't have enough to compensate from the holes and the issues that they have on their team. I'm sorry. Tua's a nice quarterback. He's not Lamar Jackson. And Tua can't mask all the other holes, you know, that Miami has. And, you know, we are finally in their little gauntlet of schedule. We've talked about so many times on this show. Can't wait to see Miami the last couple weeks of the season. Super excited to see Miami when they have some real competition. And you know what? They've just been brutal. They've just been brutal against, let's see here. Well, Miami has gotten significantly outscored by Philly, Buffalo, and Baltimore. Blown out by Buffalo earlier this season, blown out by Baltimore last week. The Eagles game wasn't a blowout. And honestly, you know, who are we to gauge where the Eagles are at this point either in terms of their inconsistencies? But
let me ask you this, Luke. Randomly, while you're in the middle of that thought, I have my answer. I just want to get a feel on your answer. If Jalen Waddle plays in this game, how many points more do you think the Dolphins score? I have a number in mind. And once again, the defense cost them this game for what it's worth. Like, I don't, you know, two or three some interceptions, don't get me wrong, but like the defense gave up 56 points. So if the defense was where we wanted it to be, Luke, then I think we would have seen them limit the scoring of the Ravens. So I do want to put that out there. My question, though, is Jalen Waddle plays, how many more points do you give the Dolphins when they've got both of their bookend wide receivers?
Yeah, it's tough to put a number on it in that scenario. I mean, Jalen Waddle played against the Bills, right? Jalen Waddle was banged up, but he played, you know, at least a half against the Eagles. Mm-hmm. Jalen Waddle's played most of the season, and Miami's identity is who they are. And I made a good or bad analogy based on how you look at it, but just Miami needs some more Dan Campbell and the Lions need some more Mike McDaniel. It just seems like Miami needs the grit and, you know, Detroit needs the creativity. And they tried to get super Mike McDaniel-ish, Detroit did on Saturday, and we'll get there. They went like, you know, mega Mike McDaniel, like galaxy brain Mike McDaniel at the end of that game. And maybe they should have won the game. I don't know, but getting back to Baltimore, I just think they're I think Mike McDaniel's a great coach. He hits it off with his players, it seems, on a level that is kind of unprecedented. Like, he defines players' coach. You know, you hear the guy is so laid back. He's not afraid to get up there, curse a little bit, kind of like be one of the bros, but at the same time, they respect the hell out of him. You know, I caught some of the Hard Knocks clips. But I saw a note about Baltimore, and I don't really think Jalen Waddle would have mattered. Not, you know, as you mentioned, it was a defensive thing, but Ken McKissick from 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore made a really nice note here on Twitter that Tua was getting the ball out early, but the Ravens adjusted. After halftime on Sunday, according to Ken on Twitter, defensive coordinator Mike McDonald of Baltimore didn't use any 5-plus rush on the blitz, didn't blitz from off the ball, didn't call any stunt, And he employed and he did not employ any simulated pressure. So after halftime, 3.1 yards per play in Miami. So
I mean, when you said, hey, if you want to beat us, you're going to have to throw the football and you're going to have to earn it. That's basically what they said.
And, you know, we know you're doing quick stuff, so we're not going to give you the quick stuff. And how great is it to see coaches not be stubborn? It's unbelievable. We talked about Buffalo a couple weeks ago and Joe Brady. I love that quote from Joe Brady when, you know, maybe they were a little premature in getting rid of Ken Dorsey. But, you know, Joe Brady said, I call a game. I don't call the plays. He's not afraid to, you know, get off the game plan if the defense is giving him a different look than he expected. And you don't always see that. You see some very stubborn coaches, as I know you're going to get into at some point.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And look, and this is where what we talk about, Luch, when we say coaches make the league. Now, here's the thing. I think Miami, I do think they're a good football team for what it's worth, but they just can't, they're not top tier right now. And I think they're fine with that as long as they keep building, right? I think Tua can get them to a championship within the right situation. You know what I mean? But, like, guys have to stay healthy, and they're probably going to need to add a few more pieces to their defense for this to really come together. What I will say, though, is this, and this is about tier one, tier two, tier three. The Ravens have been showing you now, Luch, for an extended period of time, why they are a tier one football team. Like, they just throttled a tier one football team, and then they come in and just demolish a tier two football team. I know they, you know, kind of got in this shootout with the Rams because it's football, right? Like, things aren't going to go perfect week to week to week. But if the Ravens are playing lower level competition, I mean, it's going to be a beatdown. But it's going to be a beatdown because of Lamar Jackson. Here's the thing, Luch. Like, think about this. If you take Tua and send him to Baltimore, does Baltimore have the same level of success? I don't think so. If you take Lamar Jackson and send him to Miami, Luch, they may not lose any football games. That's not an exaggeration. The weapons in Miami is something that he's never had. Do you get what I'm saying? Think about Tom Brady. And I know we kind of went over this last year. I mean, last week. This will be my last statement about the Ravens, and I'll let it go. Tom Brady left New England, went down to Tampa Bay. He had a handful of weapons. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and a band of brothers. Offensive line was okay. I'm not going to call it. It's okay. And they won a Super Bowl. Luch, I think Lamar Jackson, in terms of, okay, my last statement here. If you take Lamar Jackson off the Ravens, I don't think they're tier one. And no, that's the effect we're talking about with Lamar. And I think he's just doing it such a different way. Now, yesterday, Luch, we saw it with the pass. I think Lamar had like 324 and 5 touchdowns or something crazy. But week to week, Luch, what you're seeing is, and you know how I feel about this, but if I'm going to say it about Aaron Rodgers, I'm going to say it about Lamar. Lamar is an electrifying football player, but he's also a game manager. See what a lot of times we use game managers as a negative term to say, oh, guys aren't doing this or guys aren't pushing the ball down the field or guys aren't. But the same reason I call Aaron Rodgers a game manager is because he just knew how to win football games. He wasn't going to light the world on fire with stats, right? But he could get you wins during a season. Now, whether or not he could get it done in the playoffs is something TBD. I'm saying long term. But during the season, Aaron Rodgers could pick up wins, Luch. That's why you always saw 10 wins, 11 wins. He could get wins without the gaudy numbers. Why? Because he wouldn't have the turnovers. He would make sure he had the team in positions to win football games by keeping the turnovers down and con- continuing to move the chains in his way. If you look at Lamar, same thing for Tom Brady. If you I'm not saying like, so I'm using game manager today in the term of a positive way. If you got a quarterback that can take care of the football, Lamar did have a fumble problem at some point. So I don't want to do it. He did have a fumble problem. But an interception problem has not really been his thing. Lamar knows how to keep the game alive. Second and 13. Instead of throwing that ball into trouble, Lamar will say, well, I'll take the 4 or 5 yards rushing that I can get, or the 8 yards rushing, and get out of bounds. And then we'll come back and get back to the next play. Instead of me pushing the ball down the field in the triple coverage with Zay Flowers as an example. You see what I'm saying? So understanding, hey, how do I help my team win is a big part of playing the quarterback position. And I think Lamar has really elevated in that area where some quarterbacks that maybe we don't think about have not.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's fair to just to counter your point, play a little devil's advocate here. I don't know if it's fair to label Lamar a game manager because he might not have the gaudy numbers. Oh, can they win down 10? Can they win from behind? I think they can. And obviously, it's not a pass-first offense as much as you know, Ted Monken. Maybe there was a perception that, you know, people thought he was going to come in and, you know, Lamar's dropping back 45, 50 times a game. And no. That wasn't,
I think,
really
he made it comfortable for him, though.
He made it as functional as it could be when it's necessary. And, you know, the thing about Lamar, okay, you're down 10 late. Well, if the defense wants to play quarters coverage with three down linemen, Lamar's going to pick up 9-10 yards on the ground, 3-4 plays, like you said. And he can cover 50 yards on the football field in about, you know, 40 seconds. Before you know it, they're inside enemy territory. And Lamar had zero passing yards the last four plays, but, you know, here we are. So
yeah, once again, Luch, I wasn't trying to use game manager in the that's what I said. It's not in a negative sense. It's just, I think I'm a victim of this. We use game manager in such a negative way,
right?
But understanding game situation, I need to take care of the football here. We need to move the chain. Like, that's, you need to have some game manager in you to be a successful quarterback. Like, this is why Jameis Winston is a backup. If he had a little bit more game manager in him, Jameis might be one of the greatest quarterbacks of this decade. But he doesn't have enough game manager in him. So, believe it or not, this was Josh Allen's problem prior to, he didn't have enough game manager to balance it out. Like, you need both to be successful.
I think Lamar's football IQ has grown exponentially since he's came in the league, right?
Incredible.
And I'm a big Josh Allen guy. Of course, this year I got the 35-1 ticket in my back pocket. So, but yeah, he still has a lot of that gunslinging mentality, but you got to take the bad with the good when it comes to Josh Allen. And we're not here to say that Lamar doesn't commit turnovers. He had a bit of a TO problem early in the season, but you know, he was trying to do a lot. If there's any silver lining here, the Baltimore has a good problem to have with Isaiah Likely. They're going to have to figure out a way to get him more involved, you know, next season with Mark Andrews on the field together. And why not? He's been incredible. I mean, maybe they're kicking themselves for not incorporating him, you know, a little more early in the season or last year. We saw him fill in for Andrews, you know, on occasion in the past, but I don't want to see Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely, two big bodies who can also block. And then you have to worry about them, you know, in the pass game as well. I'm not saying it's the Gronk, Aaron Hernandez, you know, two tight end type set of a threat, but in this day and age when you got Lamar, you know, but then again, that team didn't have legs back there. They had Tom Brady. So you give me two tight ends who are receiving threats like that with Lamar back there. Woo. Imagine if Baltimore is able to add one more solidified, you know, bona fide wide receiver one in the offseason. I mean, Zay Flowers is incredible, but he just kind of strikes me as like, That slot guy, the speedster, like he needs a complimentary big body piece on the outside, I feel like, and that would be scary.
Luch, let me tell you something. I think Todd Monken is going to have the best, most interesting offseason of any offense we've seen in the NFL. When you've got Isaiah Likely, and like, why don't you, Luch? I don't see any reason why you don't try to incorporate both of these guys on the field and let's say 40% of your offense at this point. And the reason why I'm saying that, Luch, is Likely's quick enough. He can split out. Like these are good problems to have. And I'm going to trust that Monkey says, you know what, guys? Hey, listen, we're going to have to figure out a way to get both of these guys going in every game, not just when Andrews is down. Because if so, Luch, this is going to help elevate Lamar's weapons. Like, so hear me out here. At this point, if they could get Likely and Andrews going, like I said, 40 to 50% of the snaps together, they're going to have Zay Flowers because he's on a rookie deal, obviously, so he's going to be there. Maybe they go out and get another wide receiver. Like, I think OBJ should come back. And Luch, and then but watch this. He could be a guy that plays 50% of the snaps. That would protect him. That would have him fresh for the playoffs. And Luch, they could really open up this offense. Like you said, they get one more big piece or mid-range piece. Because if you can play Likely and Andrews and Flowers together, you get one more of these wide receivers. Now, I know they got Bateman and Aguilar and all these guys. But imagine if, as an example, they could get their hands on a Davante Adams. As an example. Now, Davante, I don't think Davante would have the same numbers, but I think he would be okay with that, understanding that, hey, I got a chance to win here, buddy. And just as an example, Luch, if you had to deal with Davante, Flowers, Andrews, Likely, Lamar, Gus the Bus, I don't think he's going anywhere. Like, it would be a problem, Luch, on every turn. I like the ideology there. I think Todd Monkey's got a good problems to have in the offseason.
Yeah, and I mean, just looking at 2024, there are 8 teams currently negative in cap space that are going to have some trouble in the offseason and figuring some things out. Baltimore's not one of them. They don't have a ton of room. They're 21st in cap space, according to SpotTrack.com. I don't know. I'm on it a lot, and I still don't know how to pronounce it. But anyway, they are, you know, they aren't in cap hell. So maybe they could get a nice little 1-2 year deal with a Mike Evans. Like, that's I know you said Davante Adams, but boy, does that scream red zone help? Does that scream like red zone help between, you know, we take Mark Andrews out of the picture, you know, you don't have like a dominant red zone enforcer. I mean, he's making it work, but
if Mike Evans went to Baltimore, Luch, I just,
doesn't that fit like a glove, right?
Oh man. And yeah. he's not one of those diva wide receivers anyway. All he does is go out there and put up 1,000-yard seasons every year. Like, he's been durable, doesn't get hurt a lot. Not a lot. He doesn't miss a lot of games, like Luch.
Ultra competitor, not a head case. He'll lead.
Yeah,
we'll see.
It seems like he would fit into the culture well there, because he seems like, on the surface, to be a head down, put in the work type of player.
If he's willing to take, you know, a 1-2 year deal, right? I mean, it's going to come down to, you know, he's on the other side of 30. It's crazy to say that, by the way. That one, the fact that Mike Evans is, I heard someone say future Hall of Famer Mike Evans last month, and I was like, holy shit. Not that I disagree with it. Not that I disagree with it. Just the fact that I feel like he's still catching balls from Johnny Manziel at A&M. I feel like that was yesterday.
Yeah. That's the crazy part about it. That's why I love this podcast, Luch. Like, just being able to let our hair down and just talk football as a fan from time to time. And look, I love DFS. I love Pick'em. But just being able to talk about it as a fan. Folks, listen, Mike Evans, seriously, might go down as one of the greatest non-diva wide receivers in the history of the NFL. This is not an exaggeration. Like, if you think about non-diva wide receiver, there's only a handful, in my opinion. Non-diva wide, but just think about his approach, how he's worked. You don't see him complain. Look, he's going to get into it with Lattimore every game they play against the Saints. He's going to get ejected, but that's just one thing. Outside of that, Luch, to put up that many consecutive 1,000-yard seasons with all the quarterbacks he's had.
Right, and people,
unbelievable.
There's, there's probably a slim majority that would say, well, when he had Jameis Winston, they were terrible. The negative game script, he was throwing 50 times a game. Well, Tom Brady, they had neutral and positive game scripts, and he was putting up – I know Tom Brady is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, but you can throw the game script thing out of the window with, well, Mike Evans, you know, number. He's unbelievable. And that's – the non-diva thing is really funny. I'm sure, you know, most of you listening, and I'm sure you, Chief, have saw the Rashard Mendenhall, Will Compton stuff. Maybe we could have a diva versus non-diva – all time, all star teams, and see a diva is pretty subjective, but we know we can find them. And you know, there's still some guys.
Stephon Diggs, diva wide receiver.
Yeah.
AJ Brown,
diva
wide receiver.
Diva versus non diva. I like that. Maybe we'll have to put some lineups together for the next pod.
Okay.
Let me.
Guess what? Devontae Adams, believe it or not, diva wide receiver.
Is he? Do they just want to win? I mean, haven't heard much since they've been winning.
Diva wide receiver.
The divas are pretty loaded already, and we just named three people. Yeah, so Mike Evans leads the non-diva wide receiver.
Well, no, there's some others.
Oh, Cooper Kupp.
Cooper Kupp is going to go in the non-diva.
Puka?
Wide receiver. Puka's going to go in the non-diva.
Mm-hmm.
Our guys from San Francisco, Debo, Ayuk, they're going in the non-diva category.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, CeeDee Lamb's going to go in the non-diva. Have you ever heard CeeDee Lamb complain?
Amon-Ra,
you see what I'm saying? But remember, these guys don't have the body of work that Mike Evans has yet.
Okay, so what's Tyreek Hill?
So here's the thing. Tyreek doesn't really complain either. But Tyreek's kind of in this middle ground because he has to go and defend his quarterback probably more than anybody. Out of all the wide receivers in the league, Tyreek might have to defend Tua more than anybody.
You ever watch Ballers on HBO with The Rock? You ever watch that series?
I haven't. That's what I got to get into. I don't mind that.
One of the main characters, Ricky Jarrett, he plays the diva wide receiver. He's one of the clients of Dwayne in the show. Dwayne's like the sport agent. And he just plays the best diva wide receiver role. I mean, he just gets in the most ridiculous situations, you know, goes out to the club, accidentally gets in a fight, you know, knocks up some chick, and then, you know, they're going crazy and all this stuff. He gives me Antonio Brown vibes. Like, it's such a great show. I don't like how that series ended.
Antonio Brown goes in the diva wide receiver category, but when he was on his one.
How good was he, though?
Oh,
he's the 1.1 of diva wide receivers, though.
Yeah.
But he's not current. He's not in the league, though, so we don't got to worry about
him. In the diva wide receiver category. Well, I mean, listen, but that's what I'm saying, just comparatively. Ocho Cinco probably goes in there.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Terrell Owens, T.O., probably goes in the diva wide receiver category. However, Jerry Rice does not. Non-diva. Wide receiver category, I think. But anyway, we don't want to listen. Now we're getting historical. So I'm gonna put a bone. Hopefully, some of you guys that listen to this pod appreciated some of the older guys and the history. And you know, I love the game. So anyway, Luch, I want to hop to something here. I want to call this one. Maybe let's call this one our standings segment. And we talked about this a little bit last week, Luch. What in the world is going on in Cleveland? Is this sustainable? I mean, they're 11-5. Like, and Luke, you know, this was my sneaky underdog from the beginnings, from the first podcast all the way through. This has been my sneaky team all season. I didn't expect us to have to get Joe Flacco in the end to carry this team to the finish line. Luke, they're 11-5. Have already clinched the wild card. And to me, Luce, this is incredible. The offense was essentially unlocked with Joe Flacco.
Yes, it was.
And I think what they've been able to do, hear me out here, Luce. Stefanski, I think, should be in running for coach of the year. I don't, look, say what you want. this team is 11-5 with all the turmoil they've had at quarterback all season. Luch, they've had probably some of the biggest wins in football. That's not an exaggeration here. Week one, yeah, I know Joe Burrow's down. Beat them 24-3. Beat the Titans 27-3. They did lose to the Ravens 28-3. But then lose, they beat them 33-31 the next time around in Baltimore. They beat the 49ers at home. They beat the Browns. They beat the Steelers. They beat Luch. They've beaten the 49ers and the Ravens.
Yep.
They're 11-5.
That Ravens game was crazy. There were so many turnovers in the second half. That's football.
But Luch,
you're right.
Those are two we're calling them tier one teams. How many tier one teams have we said we have in the NFL? Two. How many have they beaten? They've beaten both of them. One of them is in their division, and they had to go on the road to do it. I don't think he's going to get it, Luch, but I would be banging the drum right now for Stefanski as coach of the year with having to do this with four different quarterbacks and Joe Flacco coming down to Joe Flacco at the end, leading them into a wild card spot. Losing Nick Chubb, losing Luch, they may have lost Elijah Moore here. Amari Cooper didn't play the last game. And they still just went and just beat down. Look, it was the Jets. I get it. But it was still a beat down. Luch, I think Stefanski should win Coach of the Year. And I don't think he's going to get it. But he should. He's earned it.
I don't know why that defense on paper is nasty. And if that thing travels in the postseason, it's going to be trouble. I feel like, you know, they're very inconsistent. They've shown their identity at times. And maybe some of it was poor field position and they were just gassed when, you know, the kid was starting or they had some poor quarterback play. Even Deshaun Watson was terrible when he played this year. I mean, let's just call it how it is.
No, he was. And my last point here, Luch, about the Browns. And I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
No, you're good.
What's the Browns record?
Is that a rhetorical question?
I do want you to answer it for our listeners. I do want you to answer.
So they are what, 11-5?
Name me two other teams that have a better record than the Browns in the AFC right now.
I can only name one, Baltimore, right?
And they're tied with Miami. There's only one team in the AFC that has a better record than Cleveland, and it's in their own division. Luch, how does Stefanski not win Coach of the Year? It's crazy. Crazy.
Maybe
their tie was Miami. The Chiefs are 10-6. The Bills are 10-6. And if they were in the AFC South, they would have already clinched the division. Everybody there is 9-7 except the Titans. Sorry, pour one out for your Titans, Luch. Incredible. And look, it's just incredible what he's done with this team. 11-5. Luch, I would not be shocked if the Browns went to the Super Bowl.
I mean,
get past Baltimore, they go to the Super Bowl.
Honestly,
this is what it is.
Cleveland has to be the one team Baltimore does not want because they're so familiar with each other.
Them. Yes.
But first of all, the Joe Flacco thing, Cleveland is actually throwing the ball 8% more in neutral pass situations the last 5 weeks. So unlocked, whatever term you want to use, they're just not being held back anymore by, the carousel of starting quarterbacks Cleveland had. Testament to hitting some draft picks, the depth, you know, Jerome Ford, more than serviceable. Yeah. You bring in Kareem Hunt to fill in the gaps. You know, Amari Cooper's doing his thing. Hopefully Elijah Moore has a speedy recovery. I mean, that was brutal, hard to watch. You know, I don't even, you know, forget playing football. Hopefully he's just okay. But the emergence of David Njoku was kind of a necessity for this team to really sustain the level of play they've been enjoying. But you know, it comes down to some bookends they have on the offensive line, Joel Bitonio and Wyatt Teller. You have one beast on the left side, one beast on the right side. And you know, those guys are glue up front. And I mean, come on, Denzel Ward, Greg Newsome, solid on the outside. you know, probably top five or six cornerback tandem when they're both healthy. So Darius Smith, Miles Garrett's a beast. You know, Anthony Walker, when he's healthy, also good. It's just a well-rounded team, and we've seen crazier things happen. I think Cleveland is live, especially with how open the AFC is. And this is the no faith league, right? I mean, we saw Baltimore absolutely handle San Fran in California. We've seen Baltimore getting crazy games with Cleveland. We've seen them lose a couple times. We saw the Rams take them to the brink in the rain at home. I know everyone's thinking it's a lock. It's a lock for the Ravens and 49ers, but man, has 17 weeks of this taught us anything by now?
Looch, listen. If you had to ask me right now, do I think the Browns beat the Ravens? No. But if the Browns were to beat the Ravens in the playoffs, would anybody actually be surprised? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think everybody would say, hey, man, I think they would go back to your statement, Looch. This is the one team they didn't want to see, and they saw him at the wrong time. Like, they just saw him at the wrong time. San Francisco, do I think they have an easier path? Not necessarily. Like, I think both teams are there, but I think Dallas has a bad taste in their mouth. Hear me out here, Loops. It's just a one-game season at that point. They see Dallas on the wrong day, and it could be troublesome. They get any type of pressure on Purdy, it could be troublesome. Trent Williams can't go, it could be troublesome. Christian McCaffrey, if something, it could be troublesome. If Debo, like, you know, I'm just saying, like, even though these are tier one teams, I do think San Francisco is a little less inept to handle injury than Baltimore, for what it's worth, because of the quarterback. I think Lamar can overcome injury deficiencies.
He already has.
Correct. That's my point. I don't think Purdy can overcome that if the wrong injuries happen.
I think Trent Williams is more important than Christian McCaffrey. You could argue, but just in terms of another argument we could have. But
Yeah.
You're right. And just for time purposes here, we have 10 minutes to talk about two other games. Then we need to talk about some of these crazy Week 18 matchups. 10 total minutes. Let's break it down in half here. We got to go to Detroit and Dallas. I'm just going to say one thing. I gave out, it was early last week, two plays that caught my attention. I said 6.5 too much for Detroit. I hope some people tell that one. Didn't quite get there on the Bengals pick. They were getting, 6.5 early last week, too, against Kansas City. Was looking good for most of the game. Bengals couldn't cover the spread. Sorry, folks. Wish we had that one, too.
Had opportunities. Had plenty of opportunities.
Yeah, but you know what? Both teams kind of are who I thought. You know, we watched that. They are who we thought they were in those games. Miami was who we thought they were. No one could predict the way this Dallas-Detroit game ended, but you know, I said something like on the pod, like what separates these two teams, right? One has a good offensive line. One has a really good pass rush. One team's good at running the ball. One team's going to pass the ball. Thought we'd see some one or two explosive pass plays. We got the 90-yard bomb from CeeDee Lamb. Like, there's Detroit's deficiency. Deer in headlights, 92-yard breakdown. You know, we also saw Detroit have a little bit of success on the ground as well. So, boy, oh, boy. I mean, what to say about the closing sequence of that game, Chief?
Loops, let me just say, if people listened to the pod last week, I gave a vivid description of how I thought this game would go.
Play by play.
And guess what? I'll be darned if we weren't close. We were close to that description. It just ended up not being like a 4th-and-2. It ended up being a 2-point conversion. But, Looch, what did I tell you last week? It was going to come down to does the aggressiveness – does the real aggressiveness of Dan Campbell outweigh the fake aggressiveness of Mike McCarthy? You remember I mentioned this?
I do.
And let me just say, I'll let you talk more about that last play. I'm going to talk about what I always talk about. And Dan Campbell got too aggressive. His aggressiveness got the best of him. Looch, I know our good friend Kamish, check him out at Kamish Film Room. I know he put this out, and Luke says, is this a Chief tweet? If Dan Campbell just kicks a few freaking field goals, just one. Luke, if Dan Campbell kicks just one field goal instead of going for it, early in this game, this score ends up being 23-20 at the end of the game. And now Dallas has to go and say, hey, they have, look, Brandon Aubrey's great, but Dallas has to try to drive this ball down the field and kick a field goal to tie it, to send it to overtime. If they kick the field goal, because in my mind, so what the thing is, if they kick the field goal early, Luch, it's 22-20, they kick extra point, they're out.
Yeah.
They don't take the points. Folks, listen, analytics people, I invite you to have a discussion with me on Twitter. There are so many situations, Luch, this season where coaches opt to go for it because, oh, the analytics. Folks, I'm huge on analytics. That's my good friend, Luch. I love it. But in football, I think sometimes we have to think about how it impacts later in the game. And that's what I always say, right, Luch? Take the points early so you can have a different play calling thought process later. If you keep taking the points when you can get them, when the game is not out of control. I'm not talking about, Luch, when it's 28-0 and it's like, okay, we got to score some points. I'm talking about 10-0, 14-0, even 17-0. You need to be trying to take points when you can get them, because later on in the game, those points are going to become invaluable. And this is what happened with the Lions. If they took the points early, we're not even having this discussion. The Lions may even win this game. But now we're here on a Monday afternoon talking about a last play debacle when it shouldn't have even happened.
Yeah. Luch, and
back over to you.
I mean, it just seems like every hour there's more information leaking about the final play, whether or not, you know, the lineman went over, whether or not he was supposed to give a hand signal about it instead of saying something verbally, what Dan Campbell actually ran through before the game with the referees, you know, and talking about exactly what they were going to do. Whoever's fault it was, I don't know. That was a really, really late flag regardless, though. Maybe there was a miscommunication between the referees and the staff. There more than likely was. But here's my devil's advocate about going for it from the 7-yard line. Dak was really good, but it's not like he was perfect. So I was talking to Andre on Crunch Time yesterday, our 12 o'clock show on RG. He made a good point. Like, from a confidence standpoint, you know, these are my guys. We're going to get this. I want to show all my trust in these guys, right? I want this offense to go get this and end the game. That's really cool. And I love that. Like, I would love to play for that. I would love it. I would love to play for you believe in us. We're going to go win this game right here. Not from the 7-yard line. And this isn't a movie. It's not Remember the Titans. It's not Any Given Sunday. Like, this is real life. This isn't there's not always going to be a happy ending. You're not always going to, I get it. You're just, it's, that was irrational. And there was a lot of memes and a lot of funny tweets about, you know, Dan Campbell's tilting. He was stubborn. He was pissed off. And he probably was. Dan Campbell's the guy going to the ATM in Vegas at 5 o'clock in the morning after he lost all of his money. Right? Like, say what you want to say. My stance is you kick the ball from the 7-yard line and you show a little faith in Aiden Hutchinson and your defense, you know, who already, you know, they had a big interception early in the game. Like, they didn't, they weren't completely horrendous. So just the aggressiveness, there's a line you have to draw in the sand where it just becomes stupid. And in my opinion, that was a little stupid. And Dan Campbell, great motivator, and he was not going to lose the locker room if you kicked that extra point. It wasn't like a career season altering moment. The players probably more than likely understood.
That's what I'm saying. The division is locked up, and so and I remember I told you that I said they probably didn't care. The division is already locked up.
Right,
their
I get
playoff
it.
Seating is about set. So I understood it conceptually. It's like, hey, win or lose, we're good.
Right.
But my point is, if you just stop being an idiot earlier in the game and take the 3 points, you're not even in this situation. This is the problem I have with the NFL coaches right now. Teams that, Luch, Yeah, and maybe I need to do a data query on this or put some stuff together. And you know what? I might just come up with a whole new website, a whole new tilt website. Luch, maybe we just need to start getting field goal kickers on this podcast every week. I don't know. Maybe that's something we can do over the summer. We can just call this the Food for Thought Field Goal Kicker Edition. I don't know. But winning teams take the field goals when they have to take the field goals. We talked about the week before, Miami kicked five field goals and beat Dallas 22-20. We've seen the Ravens kick 5 and 6 field goals in a game. We've seen tons of teams do this. Luch, the Texans won 26-23 yesterday. Those weren't all touchdowns. Kymie Fairbairn is an active field goal kicker, Luch. Very active. As good as C.J. Stroud has been, what does D'Amico Ryan say? Folks, let's take some points. And they've won football games by taking the points. How many games have they won by a field goal? You keep taking the points.
And I think nothing has changed about my stance between Detroit and Dallas. There might be the smallest gap among all gaps between Dallas and Detroit. But if Detroit gets Detroit is going to have schematically, I think, a decent first round matchup, no matter who they play.
Yeah, they should be at home because they're going to win a division.
What do they need to do? They need to run the ball. And if they get the Eagles, if they do get the Eagles somehow, Philly's given up 150 rushing yards per game, which is dead last in the NFL since week 10. And that's our next little segue. But I'm looking at the playoff picture, right? Who could Tampa the worst matchup for what Detroit wants to do is shockingly Tampa Bay, because they're a funnel defense and they're going to go out and stop the run. Clearly, when you make Jared Goff that drop back and pass, he just really can he win your game? I mean, he's been downright bad on multiple. He had some hard throws in this game, terrible decisions. I mean, you could point your finger at Goff a little bit in this one too. You really can. He should be your game manager, and he wasn't really managing. So he has some meltdowns. They don't want Tampa Bay, and I know that sounds ridiculous. They also don't want the Saints. They've been a little worse against the run, but Tampa Bay, elite run defense. That's how they roll. I think, surprisingly, that'd be like a tougher matchup. You could run the ball against Philly. You can run the ball against the Rams. The Packers' biggest void defensively is also on the ground. So, like I said, and like you said, these tier two teams, it's a really fun idea to have one of them win the Super Bowl. All the cards and matchups have to break their way. Maybe it'll happen for one of them. We're not sitting here and saying the Lions, the Cowboys, Miami, even the Eagles can't win the Super Bowl and get hot. With the right matchups, anything's possible in the No Faith League. Detroit is looking like they're going to get a favorable first-round matchup, and we've talked about it. Maybe they're not ready this year. If they win a game, that's awesome for them. I don't know if Dan Campbell's a long-term answer there, but the more I look at it, maybe I'll sprinkle in Detroit a little bit if they're going to draw a nice first-round matchup. We'll see. But the Eagles, the Philadelphia freaking Eagles. It's the same garbage I hear them say after every game. What's a learning experience? We'll grow from it. We'll learn from it. It's January 1st. You're going to be learning straight into 2024, 2025 at this point. There's too much talent there for them to be this dysfunctional. Even I love watching Baldy's breakdowns, Brian Baldy on Twitter. NFL guy for a long time, and he's basically throwing out videos. Why can't you just pound the rock behind this offensive line who should move people? They're better when DeAndre Swift is going, and they are just too damn good, too much talent on this team to be so dysfunctional and not close out games. The defense is downright bad, but the offense has been inconsistent for most of the season. Yeah, they put up a 30 spot, but I get it. Like, what can you do at that point? But, man, there's a lot of turmoil, a lot of question marks about Brian Johnson, Nick Sirianni. At this point, the defense is probably a lost cause. And clearly they're not saving anything from tape for the playoffs, because they've needed to win some of these big games. They needed to hold off the Cardinals to win the division, essentially, and they didn't. And they're really not showing much. They had Hassan Reddick dropping back into coverage. I think he played coverage the most that he played all year. I mean, they're trying some different things, but listen, you don't want Hassan Reddick in coverage. It's not what he does. You want him. He's on the field. He's supposed to rush the passer. So, I mean, they're trying some different things. It's disappointing. I get it. They have double-digit wins. But you can't talk to any Eagles fans and say they're thrilled with the way the season's going. If the Eagles get in and get hot, they're as live as anybody, right? You have guys that can break a game open on that team on the offensive side of the ball. A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Jalen Hurts. Get DeAndre Swift going. I think he's the focal point here. I'm not saying he's a saving grace to this team. But by the way, on Monday morning, Happy New Year, Josina Anderson dropping a cryptic tweet saying, change is circling in the NFC East. One potential move would be unexpected. Could it be coming out of Philadelphia? I don't know. But where do you gauge Philadelphia? It's just, you know what that, here's maybe an analogy, Chief, and then I'm throwing it over to you. We talk about all these NBA super teams teaming up, and there's so much talent. Can't figure it out. There's only one basketball. I'm not saying that the Eagles are the Brooklyn Nets when the whole debacle we've seen, you know, with James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant. No. But we've seen a lot of really talented teams kind of flop because they just can't get the chemistry down. Maybe it's Brian Johnson. I mean, A.J. Brown's route tree is kind of baffling. Like, they should be calling so many more passes over the middle, slants over the middle. Look what Tennessee and okay. I know no one wants Arthur Smith praise, but that whole Titans offense was crossing patterns, PA over the middle with Corey Davis and Marcus Mariota. You have Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith on the other side. Send our guy on some drags and some over the middle play action stuff. Come on, be better. I think it starts with coaching. Will we see a change? I don't know. I don't know what Josina's cooking up. What are the Philadelphia Eagles to you, Chief?
The Eagles to me are a team that are possibly out in the first round. And look, I mean, what do you want me to say? I mean, they haven't been good. They played the Giants this week. They should beat the Giants, but I don't know. They should beat the Giants, Luce, but we don't know. The Cowboys get the Commanders, and both of these teams are on the road. Now, I'm expecting Dallas to beat the Commanders, for what it's worth. I am not expecting Dallas to lose. But the Eagles, I'm not sure. And that is a problem, Luce. That's a big problem. And so who do you like the Eagles to be in terms of playoff teams in the NFC? Because right now, Luce, it's them and the Cowboys. It's the 49ers and the Rams. It's the Lions, and it's going to be one of the Buccaneers or the Saints. Who do you feel confidently saying that they could actually be first round of the playoffs? And I think confidently the answer is, I don't know. Or no one.
I think they're the most volatile team in the playoff picture. I wouldn't be shocked if they won the freaking Super Bowl. I wouldn't be shocked if they're out in the first
round. I would be shocked if they won the Super Bowl.
I wouldn't be shocked.
Here's why I'm saying that, Luce. Their defense has been dreadful. Like, that's really what it comes down to. Their offense has actually been fine. Like, yeah, maybe they stall out sometimes, but generally speaking, their offense has been able to put up points. Their defense hasn't been able to stop a nosebleed.
Yeah, that's a problem.
That's really what it comes down to. And you're saying, okay, we got to line up and play Dallas. We know that Dallas can put up points. We got to line up and play the Lions. The Lions can put up points. And the thing is, Luch, if they play any of these teams, they're going to have to be on the road. Outside of, unless they win a division, which they win and Dallas wins, and I think they win a division. But You get my point here. Like, they're going to have to be on the road playing a team, and all these teams can score points, maybe outside of the Buccaneers and the Saints, like, generally speaking. But if you got to get them at home, if they happen to not win a division, is what I'm saying. If you got to get them at home, anything can happen.
I just think if you're betting on talent, I think anything really can happen. And if they kind of really, you know, focus on the run game, I think they have some Super Bowl upside still with how dysfunctional they've been. But I think they're super volatile. But when you're getting, you know, 10 to 1 on them, 12 to 1 on them, 13 to 1 on Bet Rivers, you start to think a little bit. But they clearly have issues, but so does every team in Tier 2. But I think if you're looking for a one tier two team where I'd be the least surprised that they, you know, got to the Super Bowl, it'd probably be Philly. I don't know. I don't know what Josina's cooking up. We'll spend 2 minutes on the Josina Anderson tweet, and then we'll talk about some of these big games before we get out of here.
Yeah.
Who could it be? Could it
be? The look ahead this week is a little bit different because all these games aren't important. So I want people to understand that. Like, there's only a handful of important games this week, and two of them happen to be in the NFC East. Two of them happen to be in the NFC South. Outside of that, for the NFC, we got nothing. And then in the AFC, you know, we got one.
So we were talking about this Josina Anderson tweet about whatever the potential hush-hush shakeup surprising move would be in the NFC East.
Two in the AFC. I'm sorry. Two in the AFC. Maybe three if you want to include the Jaguars beating the Titans to solidify the difference between the Texans and the Colts. Because the Texans and the Colts play each other, they're all 9-7. You get what I'm saying? So three games essentially, but there you have it.
So what could the shakeup be in the NFC East? Chief and I both agreed that Ron Rivera was too obvious. That would not be surprising.
Yeah.
We're expecting the Ron Rivera has been relieved of his duties after the final whistle of next week's games, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe they give him a little longer to clear out his desk. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, because here's the thing. Ron has been a good member of – he's a good guy. It's just – I think his coaching career may be – it may just be time. Like, honestly, Ron probably should have taken some time off after leaving Carolina. He pretty much went straight to Washington because he wanted to coach. But he probably should have taken some time off. But to you know, stay in that vein, we don't think it's Ron Rivera because we feel like he's the obvious, hey, I'm gone. We did kick around some scenarios with Washington where we say, hey, Ron's out, and then Eric Bieniemy is now named the head coach with some form of a real extension to give him time to get this team together. That maybe. But that almost wouldn't be controversial enough to be big changes, because if Ron's out and they bring up Bieniemy, that's big news for Bieniemy, but it's – I don't think anybody's going to be completely caught off guard. Here were our caught off guard scenarios, and they all revolved around these three teams: the Giants, the Eagles, the Cowboys. Big firing would be Mike McCarthy. We don't think that's going to happen.
Nope.
We don't think McCarthy's out the door. We don't see that.
Like, you just can't shake up that much continuity. Even with Philly, I know you're going to go to Philly next. You're talking about two teams that have Super Bowl upside. Can the head coach right now?
Yeah. And we talked about Sirianni, and we kicked the idea around. But this team is still going to the playoffs. So there's no way we think Sirianni's gone.
Even Brian Johnson. I know a lot of people aren't thrilled with his offensive play calling, and he's a guy who was supposedly coveted around the league to be a potential head coach. And I don't know, watch the Eagles tape, and you probably won't be too happy. I wouldn't hire him. Not right now.
Yeah.
I don't think you can just say you're not calling plays heading into the postseason when they've had so much in place. So kind of ruling out Eagles stuff too.
Right, right. So we came to the conclusion in a nutshell, folks. Process, and look, it could be something totally different. Maybe an owner is leaving. Maybe something like that is happening. This would be the biggest news, Luz. The biggest news of all would be the Jones family selling the Dallas Cowboys. And that is not happening, okay? That would be the shot heard around the world, okay? That's not happening. So we came to the conclusion that if it's got to be big, Brian Daboll may be out as the New York Giants head coach. If it's something interesting, that was I don't want to say both of our conclusions, but just kind of going through process of elimination, maybe that's something that could be brewing under the surface.
I mean, sure, you want to give him a free pass for Daniel Jones, that's fine. But also you could say, you guys stuck with Tommy DeVito, who threw for 200 yards just once in six games. Tyrod Taylor has 3 200-yard games, and one was in the pouring rain. He does damage with his leg. They've been hell of a lot more competitive with Tyrod Taylor at the helm. And Vegas agreed when Taylor was named the starter this week. That spread crept a little towards the Giants. So, and they were kind of a fringe playoff team. Maybe you give Tyrod Taylor QB2 duties instead of Tommy Cutlets. Maybe the outcomes are a little bit different. And, of course, man, tough one to swallow with the blocked field goal yesterday for the Giants, who almost knocked off the Rams, who are most likely a playoff team in the NFC. So, tough one for the Giants. It could be. What about Martin Mayhew, GM of the Commanders since 2021? He's not an exact household, huge name, but maybe he's out as GM of Washington. I'm not sure. They're clearly unhappy with everything. Sam Howell, still tough to grade Sam Howell. He had weapons. But, they're putting Jacoby in. I don't know. It's just a debacle there as well. I'm with you, though. It would be surprising. So I guess Joe Cena handled that well in terms of verbiage. It could be Brian Daboll. Tyrod Taylor looked great compared to Tommy DeVito. They looked like a thorn in the side to many teams. I wouldn't be shocked if they went out there and beat the Eagles. I wouldn't. I also wouldn't be shocked if the Eagles won by 14. Like, the Eagles are so volatile. The Giants play a little bit better down the stretch.
But listen, that's what happens when you get competent. When I say competent, hear what I'm saying. Tyrod is an experienced veteran, right? So whether you feel like he's a legitimate starter in this league or whatever, like, it's the same effect you get with Jacoby Brissett coming in for Sam Howell. While Sam Howell may have more talent long-term, Jacoby Brissett just understands the game better right now. You get what I'm saying? Same thing for Tyrod. He's seen enough football and has played for some playoff teams to know how to play quarterback in the NFL. Despite some of the miscues he had early in the season, handing the ball off with, 8 seconds left at the one or whatever. Like, despite that, Tyrod knows how to play the position and he understands the calls. So, we'll see. My guess is something going on with Daboll, but I could absolutely be wrong. It could also be that they're just going to move on from Daniel Jones. That could also be huge, even though they're paying him the money. But I think bigger is Dable's out the door.
The food for thought prediction is Brian Daboll. We'll see.
Yeah, there we go. That's it.
And we talked about Josina Anderson, one of the more reliable reporters. When she if she floats something like that out there, there's typically substance behind it.
She's not making stuff up for her health here.
Right. Just for giggles. Just New Year's.
Yeah, no. Uh-huh. Something's coming.
You said there's a few big games here, and I'm looking at quarterback pricing on DK. The Eagles are playing meaningful football, so are the Dallas Cowboys, because Dallas still has to take care of business. Jalen Hurts is 8,100 against the Giants. Dak Prescott, 8K against Washington. Do you think Dallas puts on a show and kind of slams the door on this thing? Are you interested in the Cowboys for DFS?
I don't hate it. Like, Dallas should essentially handle business with the Commanders. This is a secondary and a defense they should be able to run it up on. So I like this spot for Dallas. I think they're good for DFS. I also think the Eagles are good for DFS because I believe the Giants will keep scoring points, which means Philly will have to keep the pedal down. And that's what I'm saying, the difference between these teams right now. I just don't see Philly shutting down anyone. And now you got Tyrod back there, who he's not going to play a perfect game, but he's going to move the ball. So Philly is going to have to earn this win.
Yep. And by the way,
and the Giants are at home. The Giants can win this game.
By the way, I'm glad Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and Houston, Indy is a big one for playoff purposes. Division title on the
correct
line.
Correct. That was my next. That's why I won in the AFC. Houston, Indy. That's
big Saturday.
One. Yeah. But I'm just saying in general that's the big one. Right. And but Jaguars got to take care of business against the Titans. I would love the Titans to just play spoiler here.
No. I'm not talking Titans. I'm saying is Will Levis got the offensive lineman new luggage for the holidays. Boy, the irony in that, because they're going to be packing and getting new jobs in about 2 weeks. he had a high ankle sprain. They rolled him out there to get reps, got hurt again, took the cart off the field. I'm crossing my fingers for Joe Alt or the kid from Penn State. Get Will Levis some protection. Get him another wide receiver. $100 million to spend. Let's have some fun. Anyway, those games are Saturday. And the other big question is, will Baltimore play some starters against Pittsburgh? Another team who doesn't want to see Pittsburgh in the playoffs. You know, another divisional foe. So we don't have to worry about that for main slate for DFS. Yeah. But very, very interesting to see what Baltimore is going to do with most of their starters. You know, we saw Bradley Chubb playing in a blowout, a season-ending injury. Terrible year for injuries. Maybe we'll see Lamar play like a couple series. I don't know.
Here are my other two, Luch, that I think are very important. And I think you'll agree here. Falcons, Saints, Buccaneers, Panthers. Whoever wins between the Saints and the Bucs, I think, win the division. Did I have that correct, Luch? I think that's both the division. I think that's the scenario. Saints win, they win the division. Buccaneers win, they win the division. And the irony of this situation, Luch, Saints are at home against the Falcons. I think we're expecting the Saints to win. Buccaneers are on the road against the Panthers, who are the worst team in the division. I think we expect them to win. So who has the tiebreaker? If do the Buccaneers have the tiebreaker over the Saints? I can't. If you can't pull it up, it's no problem. But if one loses and the other wins, it's a no-brainer. If they tie, I feel like the Buccaneers on the tiebreaker, but don't hold me to that.
I'll have to look it up while we're going here. But the NFL did a good job of flexing the schedule around, isolating those Saturday games. They also, the big one, Miami-Buffalo for the division. And that situation is Buffalo would need Baltimore to beat Pittsburgh or Tennessee to beat Jacksonville to get in if the Bills lose to Miami. So if the Bills don't take care of business, they need a Baltimore win or a Tennessee win. That game is Sunday Night Football, Bills-Miami. Two tier two teams with Super Bowl upside. Marbles on the line for the division title.
Miami better win this game. That's all I can tell you.
I don't know, Chief.
No. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. I'm saying Miami better win this game.
I agree. Three-point spread. You want to be playing at home. You want to be playing at home in the playoffs. Correct.
This is what it's going to take for them to I think, get out of the first round. They better win this game.
So for the
Saints, if they don't, they're in big trouble, I think, for their playoff lives.
I agree. Sorry to cut you off. My ADHD is kicking in. For the Saints to win the title, they would need to beat the Falcons and have the Buccaneers also lose.
Correct. So that's what I'm saying. The Bucs own the tiebreaker. So
over
Bucs
everybody.
Right. So if the Bucs win, it doesn't matter. The Saints are out.
Right. But same deal for the Falcons, obviously.
Right. But the Saints have to win, and the Bucs would have to lose for the Saints to get in because now they have a better record, and they would have just won a division game. Yeah. So
The NFL did a superb job having these games going on at the same time, right? Falcons beat the Saints. They're also eyeballing the scoreboard with the Carolina Bucs game as well. For a terrible division, it's kind of fun that all three of them could, you know, two of them are going to be out of the playoffs completely. One of them's going on to potentially play spoiler. And I kind of hope it's the Bucs. Not going to lie. I'm kind of pulling for the Bucs here.
I honestly, I'd like to see Baker. And I'm not a Baker Mayfield fan. As you know, he's played for the Panthers last year, went over to the Rams. I wasn't a Baker fan. But I'd like him just as a competitor. Listen, man, for all intents and purposes, Baker is starting to have a solid little NFL career. And it looks like he's probably going to be the Bucs starter next year. You know what I'm saying? Like, Luch, he played well this season. Finally, this is probably the most competent offensive coordinator he's had since he's been playing football in the league. And, I mean, look at the results. And honestly, I want Baker to hit his incentives as well. Like, if he can close out the week strong, I think he'll hit at least another 500K in incentives. Like, I'm pulling for him, man. I want to see him in the playoffs. I definitely think this team is interesting, you know.
I might as well run these other ones down here. Bills, Jaguars, Colts, Texans all control their own destiny, need to win. Steelers need to beat Baltimore, and they need the Bills to lose to Miami.
To get into the playoffs.
Correct. We talked about the NFC South.
But if the if the Ravens don't need anything, right? Like, they've already locked it all up.
Correct.
Do you think the Ravens sit? This is a question. Do you think the Ravens sit their big guns this week?
Good question. Kind of touched on that. Maybe Lamar gets a series. I don't know. Big question. The other couple of the other ones are Seattle needs to beat the Cardinals and have the Packers lose to the Bears. And then Seattle will get a wild card berth.
That's definitely possible because the Bears have been playing good football last couple weeks.
Packers need to beat the Bears and they're in. We'll see. So we have a couple more NFC. If you're looking for construct your DFS lineup around games that mean something, just go back and play this 90-second segment once or twice to get it ingrained in your brain. And the last big one, the Vikings are still alive. RIP to my showdown teams. I had Jaren Hall. I nailed a lot. I went with Bo Melton. Everyone else was going Malik Heath. I had Bo Melton and Flex. I had who else did I have? Jordan Love. I went Jefferson captain, unfortunately. I had Johnny Munt, who scored his second career touchdown. And freaking Jaren Hall got benched. Back to Nick Mullins. Anyway, if the Vikings somehow get in with their quarterback carousel, and got a feel for them, because with Kirk Cousins, this would be a totally different conversation. And TJ Hockenson. They've been through the ringer this year. The Vikings need to win at Detroit, have the Packers to lose to Chicago, have Seattle lose to the Cardinals, and have the Saints lose to the Falcons. So you might want to start thinking about next year, Vikings fans. Sorry. Seems like a lot.
Yeah.
So that's it. So you do have some teams that are not giving up hope. Probably some more teams than we initially thought, like playing some form of meaningful football here. And, the other for DFS conversation, the other thing is what's San Francisco going to do against the Rams?
And see, that's another interesting because the Rams have already clinched wild card, by the way. Rams have already clinched, and 49ers have already clinched the conference, not just the division. Right. They've clinched the conference. So they have no reason. Luch, if they play these starters and somebody gets hurt, boy, oh boy. Like, I don't think they have any reason to do this. So I feel like they sit there, guys, especially with McCaffrey getting banged up. Doesn't it feel like they sit these guys, let Trent Williams get another week of rest and relaxation and treatment? It feels like they should sit there, guys, or no more than a half.
I feel like the Rams, I don't know what the tiebreaker situation is with the Packers, but if the Packers win and the Rams lose, they're both 9-8. I have too many tabs open.
But the Rams have already clinched the wild card. They already
correct. Correct. Yeah. But I don't know. Would you rather play potentially Dallas? Or
honestly, I don't think the Rams care.
I don't think they care either.
To be honest.
I think they know what they got and they're rolling with it, man.
Yeah, I don't think they care.
Yeah. Matt Stafford, pretty cheap. I mean, if San Fran pulls the plug, I mean, you have a $6,300 Matt Stafford. This is why if there's a show where we're not going to look ahead much, it's this one. Because I'm sure we're going to get reports Friday, Saturday, who's going to sit, who's not going to play. Because a $6,300 Matt Stafford, much different scenario going against all the ones on San Fran than the twos.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And maybe LA will play their guys, keep it going. I mean, I feel like they're thriving on momentum right now. I know it kind of sounds stupid, and some people wonder if momentum's even really a thing, but I would keep it flowing. Right? And of course, so bad. Of course, you look at running back, and you have to wonder about McCaffrey. Elijah Mitchell might scream value.
If McCaffrey I don't think there's any way McCaffrey plays this week.
Right.
Like, he is not playing. That's one person I feel confident saying he's on the sideline with the headset on, listening to the play calling, not on the field.
Yep. Tell you what, I like Saquon at 69. I like DeAndre Swift at 68. I'm just hoping they lean on the ball, on running the ball a little bit more against the Giants. Kenneth Walker, forever carrying a questionable tag, looked pretty good last week. Seattle needs the game. He's 6,500 against Arizona. Love the spot for Kenneth Walker. Could be Derrick Henry's last game as a Tennessee Titan. Are you into narratives?
Luke, can we get 200 yards out of Derrick Henry this week? Can we get like one last hurrah?
Luke, I'm really sorry, man. I would love it, but that offensive line is so bad, and I cannot wait till they pour some funds into it in the offseason. And how are these, you know, some of these teams we talk about, how are they surviving? You go back podcast from a month ago, Minnesota, Christian Darrisaw, the offensive line, like the Browns, bookends on each side, right? Joel Bitonio, Wyatt Teller. I need Tennessee to go get someone else with Peter Skoronski because it's so unfair to, you know, an offensive line just makes an offense. They really do. For as disgruntled as Philly has been, that line is still keeping them more than afloat in the NFC. So get Will Levis a damn line. It's amazing Derrick Henry's at 1,000 yards behind this offensive line. D-Hop, 1,000-yard receiver. Ryan Tannehill, you know, poor guy, got thrown back in there. He's never once said anything negative about, like, he's Mike Vrabel, tuned in, and he basically said, yeah, there were plays I didn't even have a shot out there. What does he care? He's not coming back to Tennessee, right? So to hear Tannehill say our line sucks was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And I just don't see it, man. The Jags have a decent run D. They're kind of a funnel to the pass. I know he's killed them historically, but wouldn't hold my breath, man. Sorry about that. Sorry about that season-long prop you had going on there.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot to unpack here. Hopefully this segment helped fill in some of the blanks into who's playing some meaningful football. But, I mean, you're going to have to pay for the Cowboys, but they make a lot of sense to, you know, keep the division. And Washington is just kind of a mess. I can't wait to hear what this NFC East Josina Anderson news could be, but we won't be here to talk about it. Not exactly sure when this podcast will be uploaded. Maybe the verdict will be out by the time it's on the web, but we're here on Monday afternoon, and maybe our Brian Daboll prediction will be right. Who knows?
Who knows?
Do you have a story time or a New Year's resolution or anything fun of that nature?
Well, for me, you know, what I will say is I had so much fun this weekend. My girls were here. And we got a chance to watch Candy Cane Lane, the new Christmas movie with Eddie Murphy on Prime. And so that was good. And it's just always good to hang out with family, man. So that's kind of my story time. Because you won't forget those moments, you know, later on in life. You know, there's a lady from my church. She always says, make good memories. Make good memories. And I think the key word is you have to make the memories. And that means you have to be intentional about trying to create them. And so I think that's what I'll share with everybody. Try to be intentional about creating memories because they'll always be with you, man. Hopefully, they'll always be with you.
I like that. That's right. I needed that. This was the first New Year's without my cousin who passed last February. And that was my wingman. He was in his early 50s, unexpected. But I lived with him for a while, too. Him and his girl bought a condo in Brigantine outside of Atlantic City. So, boy, that was a lot of fun during that stretch. I mean, if you have that one friend who you, or family member who you love watching sports with, you know, and Dave loves sports betting, that was my guy, you know. We were always together watching the games and just having a good time. So this was my first New Year's, you know, since he's been gone. And, you know, I have some friends, decent friends, but I never get invited to like New Year's home party, not multiple New Year's house parties anymore. So I got like invited. We got invited. Taylor and I got invited like to 5 parties. We kind of just felt like hanging out. So we did dinner with her parents. And I don't know. It was kind of a nice little like reflection time for me, just thinking about things. And it's so strange when, you know, you get older and you go through the holidays and, you know, the more people you lose, you know, year after year. But, you know, you also gain new people in your life and you have to be, you know, thankful for those. And, you know, you want to create new memories, like you said, but also kind of honor those that aren't here. And it's just a strange line. You continue to walk right as time goes on. And, you know, so looking forward to 2024 and continuing to honor Dave and some others that aren't here, but also, you know, creating new memories, because that's exactly what, you know, the good people in your lives would be doing and also want you to do. So hopefully it's a profitable, fun 2024, and I'm pumped about Food for Thought. I love chopping it up here. And it's maybe a silver lining. There's no NBA Food for Thought because there's so much drama in that league every week. We'd probably have a 4-hour pod.
Yeah, man, for sure.
New Year, same pod, baby. It's just us. And if for some reason this was your first Food for Thought episode experience and you're like, what is this crap? There's plenty of analytics on RG, scores and odds, awesome stuff. This is kind of a, let's hit the reset button. We're recording on a freaking Monday. I don't know who's playing Saturday, Sunday, or Monday at this point, right? We don't know where the weather's going to be. There's so many other factors. It's kind of a clear your head pod. Let us join you while you hit the gym, while you're folding your laundry, right? While you're in your car driving. And we wouldn't be here without all you guys for another year. So thanks to everybody. I know we've made some friendships through the DMs, through some of our listeners. It's been a blast. And thanks for letting us hit the barbershop talk with you on Food for Thought. Will we be back for the playoffs? I'm thinking we will, right? We were in the past.
Yeah, yeah. At least 1 or 2 weeks, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll at least 1 or 2 weeks.
Chief Justice 06 on Twitter. That's Will. I'm Justin at the J. Carlucci. Hit us up sometime. Until then, Chief, you got anything else?
Nah, man. I'm just grateful to be here. And just thank you guys for listening to us, man, and inviting us in. And we'll see you next week.
See you next week on the Food for Thought podcast. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Good luck.